Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the next episode of your favorite podcast. I'm Linus. I don't know why I felt the need to introduce myself, but this is episode 12. Introduce yourself, since I already did it.
Hello, friends. I'm John.
It is Friday, December 12th, and we are back with episode number 12. Wow, that worked out great. It's 12-12.
And to celebrate, we both drank a 12-pack of beer each.
Suitcase, ladies and gentlemen. Nah, he's joking. He's joking. This episode is fueled by, it's Friday night, so it's nothing but the green bottle, the good Sir Jameson for me.
And I decided to drink like a girl. I grabbed a Angry Orchard green apple.
You know, in your defense, though, that's my fault for not stocking the beer fridge. I apologize. And I think you made a wise decision going with the girly beer as opposed to the Coors Light. Personal preference, though.
I might get into the Coors Light afterwards, but we'll see how the evening goes. So the only correction that we had from episode 11 was when we interviewed Lance, he was giving us a story about his great-grandma and not his grandma. But other than that, I think we were pretty factual.
My apologies to the Lancinator, but in my defense, great-grandmothers are probably like, what, 46?
No, great-grandmas would be about 60. Grandmas would be about 46.
These days, grandma's about 36.
There you go.
Anyway, so we have prepared for you a quite somber episode, but we felt like this is the platform that we chose with which to communicate to the masses. You know, we have social networking, and you know, that's great, but we've decided to take that a step further and go with this podcast, and we felt like this topic is definitely worth discussing, not only as a cultural issue, but you know, it's permeated into the sports world, so we felt the need to comment on this as well. We've bridged the gap once again from the Midwest to the Northwest.
Kojak was very, very excited to join us for this podcast. Again, being from the state, you know, where the whole series of events with Ferguson occurred, we reached out to him specifically to get his opinions on it, and it is going to be a somber discussion, but it's going to be something that's worth talking about and something that's worth worth thinking over.
So without further ado, we have another special guest with us this evening on the FCK podcast. This is one of our Midwest correspondents live in full effect. We're welcoming you to Iraqi Studios in the lovely Pacific Northwest. We've got Mr. Kojak Delta on the line. He is one of our Midwest correspondents. Go ahead and introduce yourself and give us your resume. What makes you qualified to speak on the podcast? What's your fanhood status? How long have you been a fan of the professional teams you've been a fan of? And just give us a 30-second elevator commercial about you.
Okay, so this is Kojak in the building from Kansas City, Missouri. Basically a blogger on all things sports, politics, human rights, you name it, I've done it. Basically, 28-year-old who loves sports, loves the Broncos, you know, season which they changed to New Jersey, which is really why I joined the Broncos bandwagon, not Peyton Manning, like some of the fans who just started joining my team. Been a Duke fan since like 2000, all day college basketball. Florida State fan since Bobby Bowden was young, going back to the championship, repeating. Basically, young black man who doesn't hold his thoughts, very blunt, won't lie to you, won't lie to the government, and always get paid for what I do.
And you know, that's a perfect lead-in, Kojak. I think that being a young black man, especially from the Midwest, this is why we wanted to reach out to you specifically. By now, everybody has heard about the goings on in Ferguson. The main thing that we wanted to talk about, and again, feel free just to talk freely. We just wanted to get your take on that situation first and foremost. I mean, like you said, being a black man in the area, you know, kind of seeing it firsthand. I mean, just kind of give us some insight, man, on how that whole situation kind of played out.
Well, you know, basically, it's been just a very wild event that's been going on, because we, as in Missouri, we are a red state. Like, people forget, we was the last state to be abolished of slavery. So it's not like we were just not lost on, you know, the whole oppression of the black man and black people in general being treated this way. Now, where I'm at, it's not as bad as it is in Ferguson or St. Louis, in that area, East St. Louis and stuff. But the point of it is that it hit us home here. Like, it hit us because we're only, what, 8 hours away from each other. And how the cops treat us here bad here. Like, we get profiled all the time. I've been profiled at least 3 times by the cops my whole life.
3 times your whole life, or 3 times? 3 times your entire life, or 3 times in, like, recent memory?
In my life. Not recently. I would say it may have been 4 years ago when I was actually profiled by a cop, because I fit the profile. But it's been, Ferguson's been one of those things where the world has seen something that we all knew about as a culture. Whether you're black or just a minority in general, you know this happens all the time. It's just the world sees it from, like, India, where the cops had laid down their vests and all their helmets because they wanted to do that for Ferguson, because they know it's not right, you know. The world has a blind eye, or not even a blind, ignorant eye, to racism, especially in this country. And it's just so funny how our leaders, I mean, from black leaders to politicians, we don't focus on that more than we focus on everything else.
Absolutely. I think it's one of those ugly subjects that everyone wants to just sweep under the rug. And so growing up in the South as a Filipino, the Asian community was few and far between when we were down there, and it's nothing like the oppression that I'm sure you felt being a young black man. But I can sympathize in a sense that we all grew up, well, not all of us. Did you grow up in the Midwest, or did you grow up in the South?
I actually grew up in the Midwest, in Kansas City, the whole 20 years of my being.
Right on. So I'm sure that the racism there was just as prevalent as it was in the South in the late 80s and early 90s. And I'm sure that we were subject, maybe not to the same, but to some extent. I can't say that I've been racially profiled, other than being singled out to be the one to answer the math questions. But being 8 hours away from the epicenter, how would you say that it affected not only the sports world, but your daily life? You said that it was crazy, and it all went down right as Kansas City was peaking, if you ask me. They came off of that big win against New England on primetime football. Was it Thursday night? And then the Royals made it to the World Series, so y'all were already on the main stage, and then Ferguson happened.
Well, yeah, because it's funny, like, we was getting a lot of attention from Kansas City, and like, there was a possibility of it being a whole Missouri World Series from St. Louis to Kansas City, which would have brought way of a lot of attention about Ferguson, because baseball is, quote-unquote, a white sport. So having the protesters outside of Busch Stadium to Kauffman Stadium would have just been mind-boggling, because we would have seen a lot of just riots going on there from the police. I'm pretty sure there would have been tear gas thrown in the parking lot for the protesters.
Yeah, and I think it's definitely, I mean, it's one of those unique situations where, like you said, there was already so much focus from, you know, from the sporting community, and then almost in the background you had all of this unrest. And I mean, that's definitely, I think one of the things that that gets overlooked is the fact that this isn't something that just happened. You know, this wasn't an isolated incident, right? I mean, this wasn't just a situation that just kind of happened to catch the media at the right time. I mean, you know, the whole area has been, you know, kind of under that cloud of racism, you know, to a degree, you know, where it was real. I mean, there was a lot of profiling going on. There was a lot of, you know, corrupt things going on with the police force, correct?
Yes, it was. I mean, it goes back, like I said, from here, like, I think a lot of people have seen it on Twitter or Facebook or social media where KCPD has been getting a lot of these videos of them helping kids out, playing basketball with the inner youth. And we in Kansas City are like, where is this at? Because we didn't see this growing up. Because now, all of a sudden, these videos are popping up. Oh, we do this. We're in the inner city. We're in the ghetto. But we as the people here don't see that. Like, and I think the videos are kind of funny because as Ferguson is going on, KCPD videos were showing up everywhere. And I was just like, who is this police department? Because they're not like that. They profile. They do everything the Ferguson police did. They stop every black person. Like, there's plenty of times you could be driving down a street and you're literally going to speed limit. Your tags are fine. Everything's fine. But a cop will see you. He'll put the lights on, swerve, pull you over, and start looking for anything to say. Anything. Let me see your license, registration, blah, blah, where you going. This happened to my sister. This happened to my girlfriend. This happened to me. All of us. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
So you basically get a citation for the DWB penalty, the driving while black?
Exactly. Yes.
Let me ask you this. In those videos of the KCPD that surfaced of the cops playing basketball with the inner city youth, how short were the shorts that the cops were wearing?
They was literally in full everything, guns, baton. Oh, and they had their tasers.
So I'm curious as to if they were John Stockton-style shorts, meaning that the video was filmed back in the 80s and then recycled and recirculated for the purpose of PR in the 20s.
No. You could tell they was, like, literally done maybe a week ago or that day because it was, like, early sunshine. You see, I can recognize the street myself just passing it last week. So I was like, oh, it's recent, but my God. It came out of nowhere. I also questioned about Ferguson Police Department was like, where was the taser at? Like, even if he needed to shoot or do something to Michael Brown, I'm not even saying Mason, he could have just tasered him and he would have been okay.
Here's where I kind of feel on the whole subject is that taking aside the fact, you know, let's not even make any assumptions as to what Michael Brown was or was not doing. The distance at which the police officer engaged, you know, the individual. And by engage, I mean open fire. I mean, it seems like you would think that he was, like, you know, trying to stop a terrorist from detonating a bomb. I mean, it's, to me, it seems that out of line as far as the kind of force that was used. That's what bothered me the most about the whole situation. There was no attempt to subdue. I mean, it was just an outright, you know, assault on an individual, you know, by the police officer.
Well, yes, I agree. And I mean, I've had police training. I've went to a police academy, do an internship. I have a couple of family members on the police force. And there's ways you do it at first. And I can tell Darren Wilson did not do none of them right. Because Michael Brown had no gun on him, no weapon, just himself. And you guys are about the same height. He may have had, 50, 70 pounds on you, but still, no, you're an officer.
So to play devil's advocate here, the story that we got, and I haven't really read deep into the docket, so I apologize if I'm misinformed, but the story that we got out here was that Michael Brown made a move for the police officer's gun, and that was when the police officer then retaliated.
That is what's being told. And technically, it's basically like three stories that's going out there. And the only one I can really say sounds correct was that basically Michael Brown was supposedly not going for him. He was walking away. Then Officer Brown had said something offensive. Then he came back towards him and said, what did you say? Now, he never approached inside the car because where you find a body at and then where the car is at, it doesn't sound right. Even the facial structures, it seems like basically he shot him, how they say he shot him, and then he literally, I really figured he didn't get in the scuffle. I figured he punched himself because if you see the pictures, it looks so small. It's like, who hit you? A child? I don't understand it.
You know, one interesting thing that you brought up. I mean, you said you had family in the police force. How does that how did that situation play out? I mean, how did that impact your family? As far as I mean, this to me, I mean, it's a very divisive event that happened. I mean, how's that gone over with your family members being in that kind of on that side?
Well, they're pretty high-ranking officers, and they have shown their disgust to me and our family about the situation because they know Darren Wilson did everything wrong. They know he did nothing right in that situation, and they're highly upset about it. But they told me, and like I've learned, it is a big fraternity, and they're not going to snitch on each other. They're not. Good or bad, police officers will never snitch on each other.
You've seen it in every Hollywood depiction of the gang members versus the police force. The gang members basically allude to the fact that the biggest gang out there is the police. You know, they all wear the same color. They all have the same moral standing. You know, they all stand on the same pillars, the same values, and they will defend that cause and that gang relentlessly, feverishly. Would you agree with that statement?
Oh, yes, they will. I mean, we've seen it from even when they replaced the captain of the Ferguson to the sheriff, to the black dude. I can't remember his name or nothing, but it's like, because even he didn't feel comfortable being up there. I didn't call him Big Ron, was what they was calling him. And Big Ron didn't feel comfortable being on the pedestal talking about it, but they paid him. They knew we're a fraternity, we're brothers. You're going to do this for us, okay? Okay.
Right. I was mentioning to my brother before we got on the mics that I really appreciate it when the current events transcend the sports barrier, because I typically like to just hide out in the sports world and not, you know, and it's a crime. You know, I really should pay more attention to current events, but I find them all too depressing. So I find myself hiding out in the sports news world to not have to really delve deeply into the really depressing shit that's going on out there. And when it permeates down to the sports level and you have, the St. Louis Rams holding up their hands in protest, you know, visual protest with the hands up, don't shoot. And you see LeBron and company donning the shirts that say, I can't breathe. I liken it to when... Yeah. The Falcons players in a show of solidarity were showing off the free Mike Vick, you know, and things like that. You know, when pop culture and current events, current political events transcend the layer, to me is really profound. I love it on so many levels.
Yeah, I do too. And I mean, it's sucky because you hear a lot of people complain about how they shouldn't be doing it or talking about it. Like, so many people was complaining about how LeBron shouldn't be wearing these shirts and everything and how they wanted Silver to, like, do something about it. But he put a statement out himself, was like, we don't mind the players expressing their feelings, but they need to wear the appropriate attire for on court. So they didn't get suspended, they didn't get fined, because Silver is, like, literally the best commissioner on the planet right now. But it is cool because they help people understand how important it is to where athletes like LeBron and Kyrie and the Rams players are doing this stuff to show you this is important.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, let's just go ahead and move right into that, the situation that happened in New York. Now, to me, that was a really telling series of events there, because unlike the Ferguson situation, you had video shot of exactly what happened. I mean, we literally, anybody that watched that that cell phone video, I mean, witnessed a person that was eventually died from what had happened. What are your thoughts on that, on what happened there with that New York police officer and the chokehold that's been outlawed, for 20-something years? I mean, how do you feel about that whole situation?
I thought the most telling thing about that was, yesterday I was at work and I was on Facebook and I found this video, and it was of Bill O'Reilly saying how wrong it was. When you have the most famous reporter on Fox News who literally is racist And he says, that was wrong. I knew at that moment, everybody knew it was wrong. How the grand jury didn't figure this out, I can't tell nobody. I can't answer that question because even Bill O'Reilly of Fox News said it was wrong. He didn't deserve that.
Athletes are given that elevated the spotlight, so to speak. And I feel like it's not their responsibility. Like Chuck Barkley said, he's not a role model. However, they're given this platform to then speak their mind, you know, by wearing a shirt or by standing for a cause. You know, it's their responsibility to reiterate the message to guys like me, for example, that not necessarily actively avoid the news and current events, but choose to focus on more positive things than what's currently going on. And you know, it's a shame because I'm basically self-pulling the wool over my eyes, you know, so to speak. But I think it's important that the athletes, just like the Clippers did when they took their jerseys off in protest to Donald Sterling being a horribly racist, delusional old man, you know, bigot. It's important to then speak out. You know, you're given a voice, a greater voice than normal, you know, non-celebrities in that sense. You know, it's important to stand for what you believe in. It's important to relay that message.
Well, yeah, it is. I mean, with Barkley, he literally made a profound statement way back that literally transcends to right now. How they're not our role models, but how some of them just choose to be our role models. Like LeBron. LeBron is so perfect because LeBron is like a lot of us, you know, single parent child who had to go through the struggle but made it. And with him doing this stuff, because he understands that I'm famous, but he doesn't forget where he came from. He's been profiled before. He knows how it goes. So, yeah. He puts on a shirt, I can't breathe, because as a minority in this country, a lot of times we can't breathe because we are always watched or stereotyped. And we're always stereotyped, no matter whether we're rich or whether we're just middle class or just really broke. But I can say that I am happy that athletes do it more now. I mean, whereas because I think social media helps too, because with that being invented, they're able to express their thoughts more and stuff, going in front of the camera and stuff, where they might get fined for saying something, where they could just go on their Twitter or their Facebook page and say it. And it depends on how bad it is. They may still get fined, but still, they're able to have their own voice.
You know, speaking of Charles Barkley, I think when he made those comments, I think it was specifically about Ferguson, but I think it does talk about the overall, you know, racial profiling and racism in general. He made a really good point when he was talking about how, when he says we, I mean, we being, African-Americans, we need to stop giving, police a reason to racially profile. Now, to be fair, like you said about Ferguson, I mean, this is just something that's just deep seated, and they, you know, the police force will just do that because that's just in their nature, whether people choose to put themselves in situations to be profiled or not. But I think he does raise a good point for those communities that aren't, you know, under, you know, that kind of scrutiny, when he says, don't do anything to give the police force a reason to profile you. I mean, not to say that, you know, that somebody deserved, you know, what happened to them, because I certainly don't feel that either of these situations were deserving of what happened. I mean, you know, people died, I mean, in these situations. But I think he did raise a good point about, as people, we all need to do better. You know, we all need to stop putting ourselves in bad situations where bad things can happen.
Well, I mean, yeah, I agree, because, like, we all have a responsibility as just individuals ourselves to not put ourselves in positions to get into trouble or get into mischief. And so, like, you look at the whole Michael Brown thing and how he may have stole some or didn't steal anything, but yet you don't get yourself in a position to do stuff like that. Even with Eric Garner, you know, my thing is that we don't always know the end result, But you know when you're putting yourself in a bad position, because if it's illegal, it's a bad position. When it's irrational, it's a bad position. When it's irresponsible, it's a bad position. When you're not doing nothing that's of code to the law, you're putting yourself in a bad position, and you need not to do that, especially when you're of color, because that makes it even harder for you to basically just get out of there. Because once again, you put yourself in a position, and while you're in that position, your con is going to be so harder than the white man. Like, there was a white man who got choked out last week, and the cop who choked him got fired immediately. Whereas, you know, we saw the Eric Garner situation where he choked him, killed him, and got off. So you got to stand, you put yourself in a position, and you can't just say you got to be equal rights. Yes, there should be equal rights for black, white, whoever, but still, don't put yourself in a position. As in, like me, I know I'm black, I'm young, I'm a prime target for cops, but I have a clean record. I've never done anything. So they have no reason to stop me. If they do stop me, you know what they're going to find? Nothing. Then they got to let me go. And then I'm going to get your badge number, I'm going to report it to the cops I know, and then you're probably going to get fired at the end of the day. Because once again, you stop me for something that I shouldn't be stopped for, because once again, I have a clean record. So I'm not scared of the cops. I never have been, because if you're not doing nothing, why are you scared for them?
I think you have the distinct advantage of being raised around members of the police force, because you know that if I don't have anything to worry about, then I don't necessarily have to be as afraid. I agree with what you said there. You know, you can't afford to place yourself in a situation where they have anything on you. And especially as a black man, you know, you're already at a disadvantage, which I don't necessarily agree with. I just think it's something that needs to be pointed out, is that you're almost starting in the negative bucket. You're already in the red, you know, when you wake up in the morning. So why give them an excuse or any reason to then, you know, choke you out?
Exactly.
I think another interesting point that Charles Barkley brought up, and I mean, big kudos to Chuck, man. I mean, I really applaud him for using his platform to talk on these kinds of subjects. Because I mean, as we've discussed, I don't think it happens enough. And with these sports figures that have transcended beyond the realm of sports, I think it's a sign of progress that they are now turning and giving commentary on important you know, social issues. Another thing that he brought up was the fact that we need to not wait until something happens to talk about race relations. I mean, this is something that needs to be going on all the time. This is something that it's long overdue to try to find a way, maybe not necessarily to fix, because I don't know if there's ever going to be a fix for that. I mean, until however many more generations there are that will move further and further away from the old notions of racism and bigotry. But it is something that we should definitely work towards, and not just in the light of Ferguson or in the light of the situation in New York. I mean, this is something that really should be it should be discussed all the time, you know, just like any other important topic. I mean, let's not wait until something hits the fan before we start talking about it, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, I agree. And it just goes back to, like, and I'll say it's black culture, to where we are really a what's hot now culture, you know? Like, we was just, like, before Ferguson, we was talking about the Schmurder song, you know, about a week ago, and Ferguson came, and now that's hot. And then now it was Iggy Azalea being racist, and then now it's Eric Garner, and something else is going to happen next month, and that's going to be hot. Like, we are such a what's hot now culture, to where we don't really stay on the topics we need to stay on. And that just goes more to just the young people having leaders. And there's not a lot of leaders now for us as it was for our parents or grandparents, you know, to help teach us, because they either died out or we are really, it's a Generation X, you know, really just ignorant to the topics that should be brought up all the time.
I agree wholeheartedly, and I feel that, you know, much kudos to LeBron and company for bringing those back to the forefront, and Chuck Barkley for using that platform. And I think that that same could be said for all youth, not necessarily just black culture, but all young culture. You know, there's a reason why Us Magazine is printed weekly. You know what I mean? Like, the attention span of the next generation, the internet generation, is 15 seconds. You know, they're on that next topic, you know, not even minutes after, dude got choked out in New York. So what about that new Iggy Azalea song? Did you see LeBron and company the other night? You know, it's so quick, it's hard to keep up at times, you know, like and much applause to social networking for bringing these issues to the forefront and shoving them in the face of the youth, you know, and it's up to the youth to interpret that and you know, like, really put some deep thought into it. And I feel like, you know, things like this, whoever's out there listening to the podcast, you know, hopefully you're reminded that this is a current topic that is relevant and will transcend for years to come.
Yeah, it will. And I mean, with young people, it's just something that they have to understand that we are building to our future, and then we're hoping our future builds to their future. As in, we have to learn to get better. And that's one thing I had even just wrote about in my last blog, was just how we need to start literally getting into using the system. Because I remember there was they were trying to bring up a vote that could black people still vote. And it passed because it was going to pass anyway, but they could have stopped that from passing. Because once again, we don't use the black vote. That's not only for, once again, black people, but the youth in general. Because if we actually use the system against the system, we could change so much about this country that is boggling to think about it right now.
Yeah, I think it's definitely something that, like you said, it needs to be built on. You know, the discussion about how we had parents or grandparents that were strong-willed and had strong opinions and stood strongly for those opinions and helped really, you know, teach us about how to do those things on our own. I think that's a lesson that we really need to make sure that we pass on to future generations. Because, I mean, otherwise, you know, I fear for a future where we don't, you know, we just take this line down, you know, where we just see it, you know, and just apathetically say, well, I mean, it is what it is, and there's nothing we can do about it. You know, I think that's a scary thought to think about, you know, a future where we don't, you know, where we don't get up in arms about injustices that we see, and to at least just discuss it, you know, and think about, you know, try to elevate our thinking to try to find that solution, to find, you know, find a way around the problem and eliminate these problems, you know.
I mean, yeah, I agree. I mean, it's just. It's like a TV. I was just thinking about how we, like Family Guy and South Park, they always are making fun of these serious issues, you know? And it's so funny how we nowadays are making more mature cartoons for less mature children. Like, we as kids, we was really mature for kids. You know, we could watch The Simpsons, get the jokes. The Looney Tunes, which was way mature, as you get older, understood, this is a really mature cartoon. But you get Family Guy in South Park where they're making fun of the Zimmerman thing. And I'm pretty sure they're going to make fun about the Eric Gardner thing.
Much kudos to the writers of South Park, especially, because when they jump on a topic, man, it's like the hottest topic of the moment. You know, it seems like their weekly show is a commentary on what's going on from the previous week. And, you know, starting this podcast has shown me that it's damn hard to keep up with even just last week's most current hottest topic to then have a full-on production. And maybe that's why their animation is so bad, you know, because they focus they focus more on the storyboard aspect and telling the, you know, making light of the current situation and making sure that their writing is on par, as opposed to having fancy animation. Like, I don't know, what's a good example of a really prettily The only thing that comes to mind is Princess Mononoke, but that's a film. I can't think of a really well-animated show. The Boondocks, for example.
Yeah, the Boondocks are like, they're so slow on topic to where, if they was going past this season, we wouldn't hear about Eric Garner and Michael Brown until season 7. And they're just on 4 now, though.
Right, but that animation sure is clean, though.
Yeah, it is.
Well, let's take a minute, Kojak. We were talking about, helping to influence the youth of America and trying to spread messages. Why don't you take a minute, plug your the site that you blog on, so we can, so the listeners can tune into that, check that out, and kind of get some of this commentary on a more regular basis when we don't have a chance to get you on the podcast.
Yeah, it's wordpress.com/KojakDelta. Like I said, I've been writing basically about social issues. My last blog was a Sit Down with America, which is about the whole Michael Brown incident, how the people, not only from Ferguson, but America could change, it would happen again, based in the sense of, from how you would vote, going to vote to those, starting petitions to get a select group of people to help pick your police officers and to pick out the bad ones. Because one thing I learned about the police force is, which a police captain told me, was that a police force is like an apple. There's always going to be some bad seeds in there, but it's not the whole apple. So you got to be able to pick them out and then stick with the good ones. My next blog, which should be about the end of the week, is going to be about the CIA report and the torturing that happened from America during the terrorists, which, once again, it needed to be done. I don't know how it's a problem after 100 years, but okay.
Yeah, I saw some of the those reports throughout the day today, and I think some of what, was done as far as interrogating definitely needed to happen as far as, extracting information. Now, the means by which it was done, that's where the question really, comes into play as far as why were these methods used? It's just really interesting. I mean, that's something for a whole other episode of a podcast that we could talk on. But, definitely. Let's go ahead and we'll just wrap there. Big shout out to you, Kojak. We appreciate, you coming on and giving us a chance to really, pick your brain about, something that's definitely not sports related, but it's certainly something that's worth, diving into. And it's, for us, I mean, it's relevant and it's important, like we talked about, it's something that needs to be brought up. It's something that needs to be discussed so we can all, as a human race, try to work towards, a better solution and a better world that we're all living in it. We might as well try to work this thing out and be in as comfortable a situation as possible.
Exactly. And I do appreciate you guys having me on the show. Everybody listen to the show. Awesome guys.
So give us your Twitter handle, whatever else you want to plug, social media, so people can follow you and whatnot.
Oh, yeah, Kojak Delta on Twitter. Like I said, you follow me, I'll follow back. Unless you're just a satanic, satanic person, then I can't touch you. I'm sorry. I love God. Forgive me for that. If you're a Broncos fan, hit me up. I hate Seattle. I hate the Seahawks, but I want Seattle to rematch the Super Bowl.
It's all good, man. We're 4 Falcons fans all the way through and through, man. I still bleed red and black, UGA, the Braves. I heard you were a Braves fan at one point, but you switched sides. What happened there?
Yeah, I mean, since they let Bobby Cox go, I mean, it literally took me, like, I wasn't a Braves fan, I was a Bobby Cox fan.
There you go.
And when they let him go, I was like, you know what, gotta go to the Red Sox, White Sox, I'm sorry. And the White Sox ended up winning a championship. I was like, And then this year, having in the Royals, I heard it from everybody here how bad the White Sox were, how the White Sox were doing. I said, it's okay. Because with our new additions this week, we're coming back.
Word. We went really heavy on this episode, man. I'm trying to lighten things up a little bit so we don't wrap on such a somber note.
Well, let's do this. I mean, so if you're a White Sox fan, then let's make plans. And we just our other guest, TJ, he's a fellow Braves fan like we are. So we need to get together. You know, as the off season goes on for baseball, and also, I mean, being a Broncos fan, I mean, I fully expect them to be in the playoffs for deep into the playoffs this year. So we need to make sure we'll definitely be collaborating as the as the sporting seasons progress, and we'll get on more lighthearted topics, like sports. But definitely, again, we definitely appreciate you coming on and talking about something that's, it's definitely not easy to talk about, but it's definitely something that's worth talking about. So big shout out, much love and appreciation for doing that with us today.
Oh, no problem at all. I mean, just let me know and I'll surely jump on. I blame my girlfriend for letting me be late today, but hey,
it's all good, man. Before we let you go, who do you got in the college football playoffs?
Oh, Florida State.
Florida State all the way?
Oh, yeah. Because, Florida State had literally
eked by every tough matchup that they've had this entire year.
Yeah, they literally can beat anybody.
It's the team of destiny.
They lost the game.
Man, you're kidding. Auburn was the team of destiny last year. What happened?
They lost to this team of destiny.
Man, I'm just saying. FSU should have 3 losses on their schedule at least.
Look, just as long as they beat Oregon, then they're okay by me.
We're going to beat Oregon.
You think so?
Like, I'm going to tell you right now, this is how it's going to go. Oregon's going to be up by 2 touchdowns by halftime. We're going to come back and win.
Man.
We're calling it right there.
That is a bold call, sir. And I'll tell you what, her right in the because, man, this is the one time you'll ever catch me rooting for the Oregon Ducks. And here's why. I need Oregon to beat FSU so Oregon can play Alabama in the Natty and get stomped on. That's all I need.
No. The only team that's going to beat Alabama is Florida State.
Well, definitely. Look, let's put a wrap on this one. We gotta bottle this up. We're gonna get into some. It looks like
to get real.
Yeah, we're gonna get into some college football playoff talk on the next podcast. It seems so. We will catch you on a future episode. That's for sure. Again, thank you, Kojak, for taking time to be with us this evening, and we will definitely look forward to doing this again in the very near future.
No problem at all.